D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen, and David Janes here with you. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, who is presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Hello, Elliot. How are you?
Good. I hope you guys had a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you. We are doing well, except for the fact that Willie's in Sunrise, Florida, and rubbing it in that it's 80 degrees Fahrenheit there, while it's 30 degrees Fahrenheit here. I don't even know how cold it is in Toronto. It's probably even colder. So Willie's being kind of -5. But otherwise, oy, yikes.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't want to be there.
That's I would much rather be here than there.
Exactly.
That anyway. Meteorology aside,
like, I got to tell you guys, I would much rather be where you are than where I am when it comes to this.
I suppose so. But Elliot, we know Barry Trotz is keeping his options open in regards to trades. But there are a couple of other teams, specifically Calgary and Vancouver, in similar situations. We often talk about buyers in arms races. Is there whatever the opposite of arms race among sellers? Like, is there a sense of urgency between those GMs to get something done, knowing that they all have players that buyers will covet?
I think there are some teams that would like to do things. Like Vancouver, which is another team that's really struggling, is absolutely a team that would like to do things. They sent out a memo last week. Everybody kind of found out about it. And therefore, it's a situation where now everybody knows the Canucks want to do stuff, and their GM, Jim Rutherford, he's not the GM, he's the president of hockey ops. He has a history of going fast. Like, when he says, I want to do something, he does it. And I don't think it's going to happen as quick as he would like. I don't think he's gotten yet the offers that he wants, but I think one of the problems out there, guys, is that there's just so many teams still in it, particularly in the East. When you hear about the absolute sellers, it's Nashville, it's Calgary, it's Vancouver, but they don't have a lot of partners right now. And I think so that's one of the challenges. And the other one, like a team like Toronto, which wants to make quote-unquote hockey trades, like we'll consider some guys on our roster and we'll trade you for guys on your roster. They don't have really a lot of things that people are really killing themselves to trade for. So I think that that's the challenge right now. Is it's like a prom, Adam. You know, you ask, but someone's got to say yes. And right now, people are asking, but no one's saying yes.
This may come as a shock to you, but I didn't go to any proms. Nobody said
yes. You know
what?
I got to say this. I got to tell you this, too. I did not go to mine either because I had just broken up with someone and someone else asked her and I was like, I am not going to go put up with that. Like that I was the same. And I got to tell you, like 37 years later, I had opportunities to go with others. I wish I would have, but I didn't at the time.
That's okay. You turned out just all right, Elliot. So
just all right, Elliot. No, just all right.
I meant to say you turned out more than all right. Not just all right.
Adam, you turned out all right too.
Can't take it back.
Just all right. It doesn't sound good. Yes.
I meant more than all right. More than all right. Okay. Back on track. We asked Barry Trotz on Tuesday about Ryan O'Reilly. He did not deny that the asking price for O'Reilly is high and could require a first-round pick and a top prospect. Have you heard about any specific teams that are poking around O'Reilly right now?
I think there's a few. And I think that one of the things that's kind of happened is even though O'Reilly doesn't have, as we've talked about this at length, how he doesn't have a no trade, they treat him like one. So, you know, one of the things that happened earlier this year, Adam, was people thought that Nazem Kadri had a full no trade, and they found out it had changed this year to 13 teams. So everybody was trying to find out, okay, am I on that list or not? And I think that's the same thing that's happening with O'Reilly. I think people are trying to figure out, is it even worth going down this road? Because if we go through it, will that mean that Ryan O'Reilly doesn't want to come here? So I think that the teams that kind of are that, they, you know, if you look at O'Reilly's history, I think people think that It's not necessarily the loudest market, but somewhere where there's a good hockey team, but, you know, it doesn't have a ton of media and a ton of noise around it. One of the teams I know that's really liked O'Reilly and has for some time is New Jersey. And I just think that that's a team there who, until O'Reilly goes somewhere else, I think that they he's not going to be traded. I think New Jersey would be one. I think that we've also wondered about teams like Florida, but Florida right now, like, they haven't declared Barkov out for the season. And until they do that, I don't think they would be able to do it. I also am not convinced that Florida would have what New Jersey would want. It's tougher for us, or what Nashville would want. It's tougher for them to make the deal. But the one team I always kind of know about with you guys is New Jersey, because I know they've liked O'Reilly for some time.
Elliot, I do want to ask you about a former Predators player who is in the rumor mill, Kiefer Sherwood. It seems inevitable that he will be traded, and I'm curious what it will take for a team to acquire him. He got off to a great start. He slowed down, but he's a playoff-style player, all-time hits record in a single season. So what are you hearing about Sherwood and what it will take for a team to get him?
Well, number one, I kind of wonder if we could go back in time and we had that power, if Nashville would have kept him. Things, we always have 20/20 hindsight. There's always things that managers do right. There's always things that managers do wrong. Nobody's perfect. And I have, as I've watched what's happened over the past couple of years, if the Predators had a time machine, would Kiefer still be here? And they would say, all right, we should have done this. I think one of the reasons he's struggling right now, Adam, is that it's weighing on him a lot. He was on a shooting percentage heater. He was shooting 30% earlier in the season. That wasn't going to continue, and there was going to be some correction. But I do think all of this noise has kind of gotten to him a bit. I do think that they asked Philadelphia about Owen Tippett. I think that's true. I don't think Philadelphia has interest in doing that. I don't think that's going to happen. But I do think that they have kind of looked at like-minded players for Sherwood. They're trying to ask for the best possible player they could get in return plus. I think they would, barring that, I think they would look at a first-round pick. I think they would prefer a young player who has been in the NHL and is NHL-ready, if not been in the NHL. I don't think you would expect to get as much for O'Reilly, but I don't think you would expect to get as much as Nashville's asking for O'Reilly. But the thing that really determines that is supply and demand. And I think there's a lot of interest in Sherwood, but I think if they could get an NHL player, a young NHL player like Tippett's a good example for him, they would do it. The other thing too here that I think it's a real challenge, Adam, is the question is who wants to re-sign Sherwood and who wants to use him as a rental. And I think most of the teams that are looking at him would want him as to keep him. I think there's very few that see him as a rental. And if you can get permission to talk to him and you can keep him, I think the price would obviously go up. And that's why an NHL player in return is being discussed.
Elliot Friedman is with us. 32 Thoughts, Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, Steven Stamkos hit the 1,200-point mark the other day. And, you've covered a lot of athletes. You've even had outside perspective covering other sports like the NBA. One thing that I really admire is I've watched Stamkos, and the Nashville fans haven't seen the greatness, right? They haven't seen him at his best. So it's been a little bit of a disappointment all the way around. But I have really admired how he handles himself through all of these interviews. He does them all. He is always insightful. And, he knows the questions are coming and they're not, hey, you're so great, right? So when he has a moment like that, I'm really happy for him. He's played better here the last five or six games. He's showing some signs of life. But you've seen him in the heyday, covering Stanley Cup finals and things like that. That's what I think has shown through, even though he's gone through some struggles here.
You know, I have to say this about him, Willie. You know, he's never hid. Never. Good times, bad times, he's never hid. You know, I've dealt with him a lot. He was obviously a number one pick, a huge prospect in his time, his draft year. And his first season went really badly. Really badly for him, especially at the beginning. And throughout all of that, he never ran away. And I've always had a ton of respect for him. I've always been a huge fan of his. And you're recognizing that for him. I think the other thing about Stamkos, though, is that he has had a ton of really bad injuries. And I think that, as much as anything else, has robbed him of what, if some of it is age, but I think some of it is also the mileage on his body. And he's got one of the best shots in hockey history. He was an incredible skater. He was incredibly determined. And the other thing I'd say about Stamkos is he's a really popular, a really popular teammate. Like the amount of players that spoke very highly of Stamkos as a captain, how he was a welcoming guy, it was off the charts. Like he was just, there were a lot of people who, when he was going through really difficult times, Willie, they would always say, like, you can criticize him as a player, that happens, but you can never criticize him as a person. And, you know, I just think that a lot of traumatic injuries and a lot of challenges have kind of robbed them of, I think have kind of taken a toll on his body and affected how he can be as a player. And unfortunately, I think that's happened in Nashville. But, you know, I watched him earlier this year, Willie, go net front on power play. And I never thought I would ever see that day, but he had to, you know, you have to try new things, and he did it. And, I think at the very least, he's shown that his ego is not too big to try different things to help the team.
Now, I do think that's a big theme of what they've tried to work with him on, is trying to evolve a little bit, try to find a few new things to see if that can bring him to another level. Elliot, you know, one of the worst things you can say about a team is that they don't get along. It's a toxic environment. There was a report that came out. And I don't know if you heard Barry Trotz's quote. We have to credit David James, our producer.
I listened to Barry's response.
To the bleep button in time and saying that report was bull. He went into a sort of a passionate answer about why he disagreed with that. But, like, how does that strike you when you see a story like that?
You know, I just think this. Losing sucks. You know, Willie, like, losing sucks. And nobody's happy when a team is losing. And is it the most toxic environment in the league? I can't say that for sure. I'm not there. But, you know, the one thing I would say is that everybody hates to lose. And if you're, you know, Derek, you've been in a professional locker room for a long time. If people are happy losing, I don't want to be around those people. And I would say this. I would think that, Is it as harmonious as it could be? No, because the results aren't there. But is it absolutely terribly toxic? I can't say that either. I would just bet it is. Just imagine if you were in a room where, like, I mean, you got, like, Derek, like, I mean, sorry, Willie, like, you kind of live it in a way. Like, you're there, right? Remember last year when the puck dropped and how excited you were about the Nashville Predators? And look at where we are a year and a half later. Nobody's happy. The fans aren't happy. There's no way the organization's happy. Andrew Burnett isn't happy. The players aren't happy. Barry Trotz isn't happy. The new owner isn't happy. And it's not going to be a happy place because of the losing and the disappointment. But I look at that as, like I said, I would be disappointed if it wasn't like that. And I'm not saying it's super toxic or terribly toxic, but I don't expect it to be happy.
Right. You could be. There's a difference between being angry, determined, disappointed and it being toxic. Toxic has got a different connotation to me.
Well, the thing is, like, I'm always careful about things like that, Willie, like, because I'm not there. Like, if it was in Canada or it was a team I was around a lot more, I think I could have a better pulse. Like, geography is not something that allows me to be around the Predators full time. Now, I'll say this. If I was around there a lot more, I think I would be able to answer that a lot better. But the thing is, too, is that I think Barry had to say what he did say the other day. He has to come out and say that that's not the case. And I think, and I would expect that if I delivered that report or I said that, I would expect Barry Trotz to come out and say, that's not true. Like, I went through a situation a couple weeks ago. I reported that Svechnikov from Carolina had indicated earlier in the season that, you know, he would be willing to be traded if he wasn't, if he was going to stay on the fourth line. And he came out a couple days later and said that was completely not true. Now, I don't want to get into a war of words with him. I stand by what I said, and I gave him equal time. I made sure I posted his response. But I have to recognize that when I'm reporting that, there is a chance someone is going to come out and say, you are completely full of it. And you know what? You can't expect any different.
Elliot, you followed the Luke Evangelista hold out for a good while. It's kind of interesting how he has started to play, and O'Reilly has a lot to do with it. He's been playing with Ryan O'Reilly, and recently they put Steven Stamkos up on that line, and he's played better. So the common denominator is O'Reilly. Andrew Brunette was telling us today, everybody wants to play with O'Reilly because he's such a classy player.
He's that good.
But they sort of fight over who gets to play with him because they're not as deep at center. But Evangelista's put together probably his best stretch of hockey of his career here, and so it's interesting to see that through the fire here, he looks like he's going to be a good investment.
Well, you know, I mentioned his name on your show. I must have been 2 weeks ago, and I got a couple of texts about it, like Evangelista question mark. And I think kind of what's happened is, first of all, you're right. He has played a lot better, and to me, it's always the best way to. There's two ways out of your problems. You can trade your problem or you can solve your problem. It's always better to solve your problem rather than trade it. That's number one. Number two, you know, I think that, but the one thing I do believe is that not only were the Predators looking at the market value of some of their veterans, but they were also looking at some guys in sort of like Evangelista's age group. And I was led to believe he was one of them. And, like, none of the kids, like the guys that Barry came on and said, like the Kemmels and guys who were going to play, none of those guys. But the guys kind of in Evangelista's age group and him. And I think probably some of that had to do with some leftover disappointment and also the fact that he hadn't been playing right now or very well. But, you know, I mean, there's two ways you can look at this. Either people are going to look at him and say, you know what? He plays well with good players. Maybe we would be interested in seeing what Nashville wanted for him. Or the better way is Nashville looks and says, he's playing well with good players. He's still young. You know what? We'll handle this ourselves.
Elliot, before we let you go, I do have a question about the Olympics. So for those who have not been paying attention, there are concerns about the status of the arena for the games in Italy. The ice surface is like, what, 3 or 4 feet shorter than a regulation NHL rink. What's the NHL's level of concern at the moment? Any indication that they would pull out of this based on the status of the arena?
I think right now, like, this is a big miss by the IOC and the IIHF to let this get to this point. Kind of amazing, actually. I don't think they're going to pull out right now. Like, it's too important to the players. You're really going to, like, I think this thing is going to be ready on time. It's just going to be a question of, could look really nice on the, it's like a house, Adam, could look really nice on the outside. What's underneath? I'll say this. I think at the end of the day, the biggest concern, Adam, is going to be about the quality of ice. That's going to be the issue that is going to be of concern here. And I think more than the dimensions and more than the rink itself, like I have to think, Adam, that on some level they've called around and said, what's our backup plan? Where can we go? But I'm told the IOC is like, no, there is no backup plan. We're going to be, this is going to be ready and they're going to play. And that's going to be, that's where we stand right now. I think they, until they're told. And the other thing too, is if you ask players, Adam, they're so jacked up to play in the Olympics. They'll like tell them like, if you want to put us at the corner of like just outside on Broadway and we have to play the Olympics on Broadway right next to your arena and next to Tootsie's, they'll do it.
Sportsnet NHL insider Elliot Freeman, who is more than just all right, has been our guest on D-Mates, Ving, and Adonic. He joins us every Thursday during hockey season. Elliot, thank you for joining us, as always.
I can hear the Kenny Loggins song, I'm All Right, from Caddyshack playing right now.
I'm reliving my 1988 breakup. That was a tough one, man.
I'm sorry, Elliot. I'm sorry about that. You are more than just all right. You're the best in the business. Thank you, as always, for joining us. We'll catch up next week.
All right, guys. Take care.
615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot had to say. I've also been meaning to get to something that Jeffrey Simmons said after the Titans lost to the Jags over the weekend. We will get to that next as well. 615-737-1025. Saturday's college football game of the week. Number 2 Indiana versus number 1 Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game on 94.9 The Fan at 7 o'clock. Coverage is presented by Circus Sportsbook Kentucky and is also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. D-Mays, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. We'll take you right up to Predators pregame coming up at 5. Willie is in Sunrise, Florida, where the Predators will take on the Panthers tonight, a 6 p.m. Central puck drop. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Dan. Dan, thank you for calling. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. So a couple points I wanted to make. Number one, I really do think that they need to move Marchessault. He's not putting the puck on the net, and he's not laying the body. There's just not enough value there. And if anything, there's really no identity to the team. It's the same old dance that we had from last year. Something's got to change, whether it's moving Dammer or somebody else. I really hope they don't do anything with O'Reilly, because he seems to be somebody that actually is, you know, doing what he's supposed to be doing on a nightly basis with the consistency. I think one of my biggest issues, though, with this team on the whole is the fact that it's been, I don't know how many calendar days, but the last time that UC Saros had a shutout was January 3rd, 2025. So with the amount of investment that you put into him, what are you really getting back? And that's always going to be an albatross over this team for the years to come. Hopefully they can address this either through the draft again or find somebody else. But I was interested just to see what the past so many, you know, Stanley Cup champions, what they look like with their goaltenders. And the only one that's had a goaltender that was under 6 foot was the Dallas Stars' Anton Khudobin, and that is the only one of the past, I believe, 10 years. So it seems to be a running theme there. So
thank you for the call, Dan. A lot to unpack there. By the way, the Dallas Stars did not win the Stanley Cup. They lost to the Lightning and Steven Stamkos in the COVID bubble, if I am not mistaken. So a lot there, Willie. Let's focus on Jonathan Marchessault for a second. Because, as Dan said, he has 5 goals, 8 points in 21 games. He had a down season last season. Everybody basically had a down season last season. And I've wondered about Jonathan Marchessault in terms of what he could get back in the trade. The one thing about Marchessault that's different than Stamkos is his cap hit is a lot more palatable. I believe it's $5.5 million per season. He has the Stanley Cup. He's got the Conn Smythe Trophy. So I am curious about what the market could be for Marchessault. What do you think?
I think if I'm another team and I have a strong center that I could put him with, I think a team looking for a top six forward could take a run at him. I think it's important for the Predators to get him going so his stock is up, right? I think if you want to get anything for him, to me, the Predators shouldn't give him away. You know, I think the biggest issue for Marchessault is he has not been able to play with the type of center, playmaking center, that can bring out the best in him. I think the theory is if he were back with a player like Jack Eichel or somebody like that, his numbers would be quite a bit better. And I think he was productive enough last year to where people still think he's got something to bring to the table. I don't think he was ever considered around the league as a 40-goal scorer, even though he actually did score 40 the one year. He's more of a 25 kind of goal scorer. There's a lot of value in that. And he has not played well at all. His last couple games have been better. And so we'll see if he's got a run in him like he had last year to make the numbers look better. But we'll wait and see on that. I think they've got some time to sort that out. But you hope he would play better. So if nothing else, his value would go up.
And Dan mentioned Ryan O'Reilly. And Willie, we talked about this with Barry Trotz on Tuesday. Derek and I talked about it after you left the show on Tuesday. The catch 22 with Ryan O'Reilly is the same as it was for the Titans with Jeffrey Simmons. The Titans did not trade Jeffrey Simmons because they valued him as someone who could help rebuild the franchise's culture. The Predators view Ryan O'Reilly in the same light. So I understand Dan's point. Don't trade Ryan O'Reilly because he's one of the few players who's doing what he's supposed to do. But when you look at the players on the roster, in my opinion at least, Willie, there is not a player on the roster who is realistically able to be traded who could get you more in a trade to help jumpstart this blend / rebuild than Ryan O'Reilly. It's a catch-22.
I completely agree. And that's why I think it's important to stick to your price, what you think he's worth, and don't take less. You don't have to trade him because there is a value in keeping him. I think if you get top dollar for him, and I do think there's a chance that it continues to be a seller's market, and you might get some offers that would maybe blow you away to where you said, you know what, I didn't really want to do it, but I cannot refuse this offer here. I think if you get to that point, you really have no choice. But it is very apparent right now, especially where they are at center this season, and maybe, I mean, theoretically, next season probably won't be a lot better until guys like Svechkov and David Edstrom and Brady Martin start to come down the pike. And it's going to be a while before those guys can really anchor that spot. I don't think you'd be very fortunate to find a free agent center or something that's going to upgrade. So Ryan O'Reilly's all you got, right? You see what he's doing for Evangelista, and whoever is playing with him is productive. So if he's gone, like I think you could shoulder the load with some of these other guys they could trade a lot more than without O'Reilly. There's a domino effect, I think, if you trade O'Reilly. So you have to be careful there.
The Predators, Willie, have won 3 out of 4, including a 5-1 win against the Calgary Flames on Tuesday. What will you be looking for tonight as the Predators try to exact revenge on the Panthers, who beat them 8-3 at home a week and a half ago?
Well, it's been interesting to see what's happened since that game because, as you mentioned, the Predators have bounced back and played some pretty solid hockey. They had the lapses on Saturday, and they're frustrated that they lost the game against the Jets. They thought the Jets were very beatable, and they messed up the game. They gave up the goal right at the beginning of the game. They had a lapse at the end of the first period, and now you're fighting from 2-0 behind and eventually 3-0 behind. But other than that, they've played arguably their best four-game stretch of the season. So they have responded after getting routed and embarrassed 8-3 by the Panthers. And on the other hand, the Panthers haven't won since that game. They've lost 3 in a row. They are last place in the East. Can you believe that? As we sit here today, the Panthers are at the bottom. Now, it's unique because everybody's bunched up, but I think you're going to see a very angry Panthers team tonight and a determined team because they just got beat in a big game against Toronto, a team that they're fighting with for spots in the standings, and they did not respond at home very well. They got beat here. So I think it's going to be a very intriguing game to see if Nashville, what did they learn? How do they adjust after getting embarrassed by this team? And the defending champions, two-time at .500 right now, they've got to be desperate. They can't fall too far behind, or else they're going to find themselves not making the playoffs, which is unthinkable.
Willie, good luck on the call tonight. Of course, you can hear the game on 102.5 The Game with Max Herz and Hal Gill. You can also watch on FanDuel Sports Network with Willie Donick, Chris Mason, and Lindsey Rowley. 615-737-1025. Derek and I will wrap up the show next with those comments I alluded to from Jeffrey Simmons from last weekend. We'll discuss those coming up next. 615-737-1025. DVD is presented by Bax Homeworks, which transforms kitchens, bathrooms, and living spaces into places you can't wait to come home to. Get a free estimate at baxhomeworks.com.
We need to figure something out. I mean, we got 5 games left for sure, but we got to figure it out. I mean, once we get through this season, I mean, we got to do a lot of self-reflecting. And whoever come in to be this head coach is, you know, we need somebody who's going to lead this football team. Yeah, I mean, that's it. We got to figure it out.
That was Jeffrey Simmons after the Titans lost to the Jaguars last weekend. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Preds pregame with Chase McCabe coming up at the top of the hour. The Predators taking on the Panthers in Sunrise, Florida. Puck drop at 6. So, Derek, I've been meaning to get to those comments from Jeffrey Simmons because those comments from Jeffrey Simmons have gained a lot of traction.
Yes, they are.
So when you hear those comments from Jeffrey Simmons, what comes to mind and how eye-opening should those comments be to Titans leadership?
I mean, listen, there's frustration across the board, and it's none more evident than what Jeffrey Simmons said. You know, they got to bring in somebody that's going to lead this team out of, you know, the depths that they're in. And listen, this is not about Mike McCoy. It's not, because I think he was thrown in a bad position anyway. This was a bad situation. This was a no-win situation for him. I can see, again, and I try to be very careful when talking about this team from the standpoint of the talent that they have, because I understand that just because the talent isn't seen now doesn't mean some of these young players can't become superstars in this league. I'm an example of that, you know, not being a part and then being a big part years later. So Mike McCoy, he took the job. He didn't have the talent that it was going to need. This team was going to need to show development and progression in this team as far as wins and losses. He was stuck on a ship that didn't have any motors, engines, rudders. It's just floating, and you got the wind pushing you toward the shore, but you can't get any, like, you can't turn the engine on to get there no faster or pick up no steam. It's just, luckily, the wind's blowing that way, so you're gonna reach where you want to go. And luckily, the season's winding to an end, so they're gonna get to the end of the season no matter what. But the hand that he had to take hold of wasn't a good hand. So I'm not going to sit here and say this is McCoy's fault, or he's not leading this team, or, you know, whatever, because he's been dealt a bad hand. So Jeffrey comments, I don't think is indicative of how they feel about McCoy. I think from Jeffrey's standpoint, he's been a part of what it looks like to win football games and how that team was led. And he doesn't feel that anymore. And frankly, probably didn't feel it before Callahan got fired. So now what he's saying is, listen, we are who we are. This season's going to end pretty soon here. But at the end of all this, we got to look in the mirror and we got to bring in someone that's going to challenge every individual in this building, not just the locker room, but in this building. Someone that can lead the way Mike Vrabel led. Because that's basically what it boils down to.
That was my thought when I heard that. This sounds like Jeffrey Simmons saying, if I have a say in who the next coach of this team is going to be, I want a leader of men type. Not
a Vrabel type.
Right, a Vrabel type, a Dan Campbell type, mm-hmm. not a Brian Callahan X's and O's type. Mm-hmm. Someone who is going to rally the troops, so to speak. Let's go to Justin on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, head.com. Justin, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Good. I'm good. How are you?
All right, good. One comment I have. Just because in this league, in the NFL, if you enter the draft, doesn't mean you're going to get drafted. And then if you're drafted, doesn't mean that you're going to make the team. And if you make the team, it doesn't necessarily going to play. So everybody on that roster has made the team, and especially Cam. If I was Mike McCoy on Sunday, I would sit Cam and put in Will Levis. Now,
well, Will Levis is unavailable. Yeah, he has shoulder surgery. Yes. He's not.
He's down for the season. Yeah.
I would put any backup that is behind Cam in and let Cam sit the rest of the season. And it's not looking good for the Titans to win out for the rest of the season anyways. And if, you know, it would help him humble him a little bit, probably sit him for a little while and just let him, you know, let him learn from just watching the game instead of playing the game.
Thank you for the call, Justin. Do we feel, Derek, that Cam Ward needs to be humbled?
No, I don't think that's the last thing. I mean, if you haven't – this guy is as humble as they come. He understands the road that he took to get here. So I don't think not being humble is one of his issues. The kid, that's all he wants to do is go out there and compete hard and not throw anybody on. He's just a team guy. That's what he is. And when you're a team guy, automatically you're a humbled guy, and that's what he is. And I understand from the standpoint of sitting Cam, because listen, you're not going anywhere. The offense isn't looking good. You can open your guy up to getting hit and injury occur. You may be doing more harm than you are good. And I know how some people could see that. But listen, these are learning moments for Cam. And as bad as it may seem right now, sometimes you need to go through this stuff. So you know how it feels and you know what to work on. And when you ever do get in a situation where you can always look back and reference these times and these games, and, you know, we've been through it, so we understand, fellas. So you have to, and I've always pointed, you know, when I got here in 97, 98, we had to go through those 8 and 8 years. We had to do all of that to become the team that we ultimately were. And that's where the Titans are at now. The unfortunate part is, you know, they don't have the necessary talent right now. So it makes things look a lot worse. But outside of injury, I wouldn't sit Cam. I think these are situations Cam's got to go through, just like Steve went through them, you know, and Marcus went through them at one point, you know, when he was a starting quarterback. You know, you got to work through some of these hard things. And this season has been a hard season for the team. But most importantly, it's been a hard season for the quarterback. But again, he's shown a lot of resolve. Just look at his history. Look at his past. He didn't have an easy road getting to where he got. So a season like this ain't going to make him fold.
Let's go to Quinn on our phone line. Quinn, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Derek, I got a question for you, man.
Yes.
So I want to know which one. I'm not a Titan fan at all. My dad is diehard. But I asked him this, and he stuttered. So my question is, which one hurt worse, trading A.J. Brown and he winning the Super Bowl, or getting rid of Mike Vrabel and that the Patriots number one in the division? I'm going to go ahead and let y'all handle it.
Thanks, Quinn.
Thank you, Quinn. I think the Vrabel part. Because players, I mean, listen, that's just the nature of the business. Sometimes you're going to lose good players through free agency or trade. You want to keep them all as long as you possibly can. But unfortunately, in this business, we see more and more marquee players get moved. So it's not an uncommon thing to see. Even though Titans fans hated it,
Hated to see it happen. But I'm happy that he went to Philly and was able to find some success, continued success, and ultimately win him a Super Bowl. So that's wonderful for AJ. I think it's losing Vrabel because, man, look at the teams that have been consistently successful in this sport. All of them have one thing really in common, that consistency at the head coaching position. With Pittsburgh, Baltimore, San Fran, you know, Buffalo, teams that have Kansas City, teams that have that consistency. And when you lose that coach that had that edge, look at New England. They lost that coach that had that edge, and they were wandering for a year or two. And then they finally found someone with that edge again, and look where they're at. So players come and go, and I know some players, you know, when you lose them, it's more of an impact. But when you have you a coach, and get it, I think Vrabel time just wore out here. Never said he wasn't a good coach, but I thought his time just wore thin. Now, if they sold the team and the new owner came in and said, okay, let's restart this thing with Vrabel with the new owner. But I think it just wore thin with the owner now, Amy, and everybody in the building. So it was time for him to go. But they tried to go the opposite direction. And it didn't work, so I understand what Jeffrey Simmons is saying. But losing a head coach, I think, has done more damage to the Titans than AJ. Because I think even trading away AJ, they still started off the next season, what, 7-1, something like that? Was it that year or the year after?
I'll have to reference it. I'm not sure.
It was one of the years. But when Vrabel's here, I mean – it's just unfortunate it happened, but trying to replace Vrabel, I think it's been harder for them to replace Vrabel than it has been for AJ. And AJ's a damn good player.
The Titans were 7-3 the following year after trading AJ
exactly.
Brown. Then they had the seven game losing streak to end the season.
Exactly. So
yes,
as good, and I think you know AJ, if he stays healthy, he's going to be a Hall of Famer, no doubt. I think losing that coach, it's really hurt. Tennessee.
Quickly, I thought this was interesting from Albert Breer of Sports Illustrated. He had this note a few days ago about the Titans coaching search. Quote, the initial thought post Brian Callahan had been to find more experience and someone who could work with Cam Ward. Along those lines and tied into the networks of the guys on hand, former Bears coach Matt Nagy, who has ties to Borgonzi, or former Cowboys and Packers coach Mike McCarthy, who has ties to Brinker, could wind up being the guy. But that hasn't stopped the Titans from looking at a wide array of candidates, even guys such as Chargers DC Jesse Minter and Rams DC Chris Shula, who don't fit into the above box. At this point, Tennessee has studied and discussed plenty of prospective coaches as the brass keeps working toward having a narrowed down list by the end of the season.
Listen, I think I'm with Jeff. You got to, whether he's a offensive guru or defensive, you just got to get someone in here that can, you know,
motivate,
command, lead these men. Because listen, when all of the X's and O's are not working quite well, you got to have somebody that's able to lead. And the X's and O's didn't quite work as well at times with Mike Vrabel. But Mike Vrabel was the leader, and he was able to lead those guys through some of that. Now, that last season, hey, listen, the roster was done. But to me, I'm with Jeff. You know, they need someone that can come in here and really establish his way of doing things and rebuild this culture.
That'll do it for us today. Predators pregame coming up next. We'll be back at 3 p.m. tomorrow. Chad Withrow will join us during the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to take it to the bank to end the show, and you better believe that we are going to have some sort of bet on Duke at Michigan State on Saturday.
Yeah.
The undefeated Blue Devils.
Go
the
white.
Undefeated Spartans in East Lansing on Saturday at 11 a.m. We will come up with something. But that'll do it for us. Preds pregame with Chase McCabe coming up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a safe, blessed, and wonderful day. I love you. The team loves you. You hear that music. Don't you forget about us, because we won't forget about you. We'll see you tomorrow, 3 p.m. on 102.5 The Game. Peace.